Are you ready for some good news? The next generation is spiritually open in ways that we have not seen in decades. The Barna Group is back to bring us this latest research, and they found that in a post-COVID world, young people are curious and longing more than ever for substance and truth. Despite new challenges that swirl around us, it seems that our innate desire to fill the God-shaped hole in our souls is stronger than ever. So what role can we as parents and classical Christian educators play to be even more intentional in forming habits, shaping affections, and inspiring the next generation from the carpool line to the classroom? Stay tuned for this episode of Basecamp Live.
Mountains, we all face them as we seek to influence the next generation. Get equipped to conquer the challenges, summit the peak, and shape exceptionally thoughtful, compassionate, and flourishing human beings. We call it Ancient Future Education for raising the next generation. Welcome to Basecamp Live. Now your host, Davies Owens.
Welcome to Basecamp Live. Davies Owens here. Thank you for being a part of this episode. I always thank everybody at the beginning because I know there are more than ever choices in podcasts. I was laughing the other day chatting with somebody reflecting on the fact that Basecamp Live is in its sixth year. And back in year one, I vividly remember I was standing on the stage at ACCS back then talking about podcasting, and about half the room looked at me like I had lost my mind or that I was talking about gardening terms and sowing pods out there into the world by casting them everywhere. So the world's moved on. We're in a new world where there's lots of choices. And so thanks for being a part of Basecamp Live. We're excited to continue to take this podcast to the next level, add new components, videos coming very soon. So you can watch us if you so desire. But more than anything, we just want to be with you on this journey of raising the next generation, thinking about the role that we play every day as parents and educators of students in classical Christian schools, which are popping up all over the world. It's amazing the number of startup schools. In fact, if you're in a startup school, I would love to hear from you. Love to give you a shout out. info@basecamplive.com. Let me know where you are. We'd love to pray for you and be a support to you in any way. Also want to give you another invitation, and some of you are taking advantage of this, and that is we're going to be doing these quarterly interviews with our good friend Keith McCurdy, Christian counselor, marriage and family therapist. And so we'd love to know what's on your mind. I want to say thank you to Leslie, who is a third grade teacher at Annapolis Christian Academy. Thanks for writing in and asking this question that we'll be bringing up with Keith here in the next number of episodes. She's asking, she says, "Hey, I want to ask Keith about strategies for relationships between girls. I've been teaching for over 20 years, and girl problems in every grade level seem to come in when there is a group of three. How do we foster meaningful conversations about conflict resolution, hurt feelings, someone being left out, and on the other side as well, and a bond that seems to be a secret club with silly behavior in the classroom?" Leslie, you're definitely not alone in that challenge of helping to navigate and give wisdom to girls, especially in those grammar school years and even beyond. So stay tuned. We'll be addressing that very question in a future episode. And if you have a question for Keith, info@basecamplive.com, we'd love to know what is on your mind. Special shout out to our sponsors of this episode, Classical Academic Press, CLT, the Classic Learning Test, the Focus Group, and the Good Agency, as well as Gordon College, Union University, and ACCU, which is America's Christian Credit Union. Great folks. All of these are folks who are on the journey with us. They're friends, they're allies. They are folks who have great resources that I encourage you to take a look at. Well, as I've mentioned before on the episodes, being a sociology major, philosophy minor, it's interesting how way back then I had no idea where this would come back into play. But as I go through my day and I think about the changing culture around us, I'm always fascinated by research from the folks at the Barna Group. And I'm really excited to have Savannah Kimberlin join us on this episode. We have a lot of ground we want to cover. But the good news that I've already alluded to in this episode is that this desire deep within us to know and love and find truth and the person of Christ is bubbling up despite all of the craziness around us. And it reminds me of Blaise Pascal's writings. I thought just worth kind of setting up the interview by mentioning this quote from him. He writes, "What else does this craving and this helplessness proclaim but that there was once a man, a true happiness, of which all that now remains is the empty print and trace. This he tries in vain to fill with everything around him, seeking in things that are not there, though none can help, since this infinite abyss can only be filled with an infinite and immutable object, in other words, by God himself. I think you'll hear in this discussion and conversation with Savannah, this basically God-shaped hole is very much alive and well, and what an amazing opportunity we have to continue to speak in and guide our young people, be it our own children or our students. So if you've not heard from Savannah Kimberlin before, we've had Brooke Hempel on. Savannah is a part of the Barna team as well. She's the Associate Vice President of Church Engagement. She loves facilitating Barna mission to provide the church with knowledge to navigate a changing world, but she's also very much involved with Christian education. She also oversees Barna's CoLab learning cohorts and many of their research efforts. She is herself a researcher and has done a great deal of work, really, as we'll talk about, being a certified data miner and predictive modeler. She specializes in advanced analytics. She is the right person for this conversation. And she's passionate about taking all those analytics and then plugging them in to practical understandings of what's happening in the world around us that create actionable insights for Christian leaders and parents. She has a bachelor's degree in mathematics from Samford University and a master's in decision analytics from the University of Alabama. She lives in Atlanta, Georgia, with her husband, Josh, and her daughter, Zoe. So without further ado, let's jump into this conversation with Savannah Kimberlin. Well, Savannah, welcome to Basecamp Live. So good to have you on.
Thank you. Yes, I'm really looking forward to this conversation today.
Well, we have been so blessed over the years to have the Barna Group represented here on the podcast. Obviously, as parents and educators, we want to know what's going on in the world. And there's a lot of statistics. Everybody has a pile of statistics they point to prove their point. And I know we've had Brooke on before, but you're a new face for us. We're so excited to have you. Savannah, tell us a little bit about what you do at Barna.
So I am the Associate Vice President of Church Engagement. I've been with Barna now for 5 years. Can hardly believe it. Started on the research team and then shifted over to church engagement about 2.5 years ago. So I actually had the privilege of working with Brooke for a really long time. So I love that she's been on this podcast multiple times. I love hearing that. So I am in Atlanta, Georgia. And as a member of the church engagement team, it really is my honor and privilege to be able to work with pastors and church leaders primarily, but also many Christian educators and parents as well, just helping them understand the times and know what to do and thinking through practical solutions and responses to the things that we're learning about culture and children and Christianity and religion and the rest, right? So how do we actually take action and respond to the things that we're learning? Also, for those of you who are not familiar with Barna Group, Davies asked me to tell you a little bit about our organization. So we are a Christian research company. We've been around for, I believe, 40 years now, right about. And so the people that work for Barna, you know, what types of people are we? We're a bunch of statisticians and psychologists and those types of people. And we study the intersection of faith and culture, so that we can provide Christian leaders with the tools and the information they need in order to lead confidently. So that's who we are and that's who I am.
Well, and I love in your bio, the wording that you are defined as a certified data miner and predictive modeler. I thought that is, I guess that means you're not afraid of spreadsheets and you enjoyed taking statistics. Is that true back in the day?
I do. Yes. My opinion is Excel is actually a love language. and spreadsheets are actually a love language that's oftentimes forgotten, but it's, yes, that's my safe place.
It may even be a spiritual gift that I'm not sure I got. Although I'm a sociology major, so I can nerd out with the best of them, but I really have great respect for just honestly, the data mining is exactly, you're crawling through these numbers and, you know, getting the exact percentages of participation. So again, I say all that to say, when you throw out numbers and statistics, it's because someone like yourself has spent hours and hours and hours grinding through the minutia to extrapolate out what's going on in the world, which is super helpful to know.
That's right. Yes, we definitely want to be able to say, hey, you can trust us, right? Like, we do all the heavy lifting and the hard work and the mining so that church leaders don't have to. Yeah.
That's great. Well, with your miner's hat on coming out of the mine to give us the greatest report, what gold have you found down there in the mine? So, well, let's jump into that. I know, we're headed in the direction of some really good news, which is great, but I thought it'd be helpful because there's a lot of news, especially post-COVID, that that crosses the paths of K-12 parents and educators. Talk a little bit about what are maybe some things we probably should be aware of that are maybe not blowing in the positive direction, but we should be aware of in terms of impacting our lives as parents and educators.
Yeah. Right. So many challenges. I'm glad we are going to be heading in a positive direction eventually with this conversation, because sometimes we're called Bad News Barna, and we don't only want to be Bad News Barna, but I will be Bad News Barna for a little second. I was prepping for today. I would like to maybe suggest that we separate, as we're parents and as we're K-12 educators listening to this, we separate Gen Z and Gen Alpha, maybe as we're thinking through challenges. We at Barna, we've been studying Gen Z more intently. So that's in our research, we study 13-year-olds all the way through, you know, grown adults. But the Gen Z generation, we are currently identifying them as children ages 13 through about 24. We don't exactly know when the bottom of Gen Z is, what that cutoff is. So, but then for like legal reasons, we're only interviewing those who are 13 and older. So, things we need to know about Gen Z. Let's talk about them first. Out of the many challenges that they're facing, there are three that I'd like to pull forward today. The first is this idea that Gen Z is growing up uniquely in a pressure cooker, which is, maybe a visual we can think through, right? And how is this generation of teenagers different than previous generations of teenagers, right? You might say, no, Savannah, like being a teenager is hard. Everybody grows up in a pressure cooker, but the challenges are truly unique because of technology for these teens. As they are developing, they are being flooded with so much information and so many inputs. And we have identified that there are two different types of pressure that these teenagers are experiencing. There's internal pressure, and then there is external pressure as well. So we have found in our research, I'm pulling out my report so I can give you actual numbers, 31% of US teens and young adults meet Barna's qualifications for being internally pressured, meaning they always or usually feel pressure to be successful or a need to be perfect. And that is largely connected to social media practices, right? We know that people and teenagers have always felt pressure from educators or from parents to be perfect, right? that's a pressure they put on themselves often in that life stage. But because of the added pressure of social media, that is inflated. And then external pressure, 25% of US teens and young adults meet that definition. So those are people who feel externally pressured by expectations or older generations or society at large. So because of the very public dialogues that are going on right now, we see teenagers responding in a way where they feel immense amounts of pressure because they are so informed regarding what's going on in the world. So we're seeing that pressure build in a unique way, again, because of technology. So internally and externally pressured. I think before I move on to the next two, Davies, what's your response to that?
It isn't at all surprising. I mean, I always think back to Neil Postman's book decades ago, you know, about amusing ourselves to death. And I think that's, I mean, his point back then, even as early as the Telegraph, was all of a sudden, you know, the little town in Kansas City is worrying about the fire that was in New York City, and because they read it on the Telegraph. And I think about, you know, where we are a million times that today, to your point, that all of a sudden everything is news and everything is sensationalized and everything is urgent. And that does seem, I mean, that erodes all of us of any generation to a point of fatigue and worry. And then you know, as you're talking too, I think probably an interesting, again, whole nother podcast here, but just our own high level expectations, especially as intentional classical Christian parents and educators. So we probably, without even intending to, add yet another layer of where we want excellence, we want high quality, we want virtue, character, and all of that can have that dark side, especially against this backdrop of existing pressure, it seems like.
Yeah. Yes, I think it's that may be a very practical response for all of us who are listening today is, okay, am I unnecessarily adding to that pressure that they're already feeling and experiencing, these teens? So yeah, that's really insightful. So I think to share quickly the next the next two things that I want to bring forward for us for Gen Z. The first has to do with technology, right? We can't talk about challenges with teenagers without talking about technology, but I want to come at it from a different angle. We interviewed teenagers and asked them how they feel on social media, and we sprinkled in some positive things and then some negative things too, because we were expecting them to say, oh, I feel terrible about myself and, you know, I'm addicted to technology and I can't help it, but it's an awful experience, right? We were expecting those types of responses. But in fact, teenagers are telling us that, no, when they say, when I'm on social media or when I'm on technology, I feel connected to others. So that is 66% of teens say that. I feel informed, 64%. I feel connected to the world. I feel accepted. I feel encouraged. Those types of answers were selected far more frequently than things like insecure. I was expecting so many teens to say insecure, and only 21% of teens selected that item, saying they always or usually, they usually feel insecure. So it's just interesting as we're thinking about screen time and you know, the amount of time kids are spending on screens and how that's affecting their development. I know that is a very popular conversation right now in the education space. We need to consider that it's also a challenge because these teens really see the positive side of what they're doing. And so there's some inner conflict going on in the hearts of these teens is they're like, oof, I'm seeing all this research and I'm hearing all these conversations about screen use, but I actually really enjoy being connected to the world. And right. I really feel quite accepted actually from behind a screen. And so when we think about the challenge of screen use, we have to listen to these teens and then filter our response accordingly, you know?
Yeah, you know, this is a topic I think I've often, in fact, my doctoral dissertation 20 some years ago was on using internet-based technology to build embodied community and sort of what happens when, because back then, 20 years ago, the tension was, well, in this internet thing, which people back then still thought was of the devil and it was chat rooms and weird, you know, it was early on, but the point was, it's an accelerator to embodied community. It's not either or. You don't want to live online, but you also could use the online experience to accelerate the depth of koinonia biblical community, which we all want. So I don't, you know, it's interesting that statistic because I do think students today or young people today are very much, we're connectional beings. And these are real connections that are happening, even though I think for us generationally, we may find it to be a weaker form of connection. To them, it's a lifeline. So I think we have to be careful to your point. We don't just throw that out. Oh, it's technology. It's bad. And you should go play with your friends outside. Well, sure, if that's possible, but it's not either or, I think is the point. So it's good to know that they're finding some community and connection if it's healthy and done well.
Yeah. If it's done well, that's the key, right? That's definitely the key. So I think the final item to share for Gen Z, and then I'll quickly also run through some Gen Alpha findings is, distrust in institutions in general, that's a huge challenge. We are seeing in our research that teenagers today, because of how they are interacting with the world around them, they are very self-aware and they are actually very emotionally intelligent. And maybe any educator or even a parent, right? They're like, yeah, actually teens today are so self-aware and so emotionally intelligent. Not every, you know, of course there are the exceptions, but by and large, they're different. They're different today than they were even 10, 15 years ago. There's this level of self-awareness, right? So part of what that is manifesting itself as today is they are very critical of, those who lead institutions and they're watching them like a hawk. And what are they keeping their eye on when it comes to the leadership of institutions? They're looking for authenticity. They're looking for honesty. The days of feeling the need to always project confidence and perfection and to always feel like you have to have all the answers, those days are behind us, I think, especially in institutions such as Christian schools, right? Children and students are actually looking for authenticity. They're looking for they're looking to be led by real people, if you know what I'm saying. So That's a challenge for all of us that we need to keep in mind, is that there's this great distrust in institutions because of what they've been exposed to in the media, right? And so we've got to respond accordingly and be the types of leaders that these young people are willing to follow. Along those same lines, with Gen Alpha, these parents that are raising Gen Alpha are feeling, the lingering markers of all of these realities that teenagers are feeling too, right? And so parents are quite concerned about their children's development. And so I think we have not done a lot of research on Gen Alpha, because you can't interview children necessarily, right, in a quantitative manner in a way that's meaningful. So we've just been talking to parents. We're just beginning to research them. And three things that Gen Alpha parents are telling us is that, number one, they're very concerned whether their child is going to stay true to their spiritual faith. So 43% of Christian parents say that they're very concerned about this. That's almost half. Say that they're very concerned. So there's this weightiness there in regards to, will my child choose to stick with the Christian faith? That is a huge question and a burden that many are carrying. The second is that a total of 85% of Christian parents are either very or somewhat concerned about their child's relationships in their school. So there's this concern about relationships peer-to-peer, but also with adults in the school. There's this, golly, I'm afraid to trust that this is going to go well developmentally or relationally. There's a lot of concern and fear there. And then finally, 47% are very concerned about the influence of social media on their children. Like we just explained with Gen Z, right? The tech conversation is a very real one. And so almost half of these parents are very concerned about social media. So that's a good summary, I think, of the challenges, some of them when we're thinking about the next gen.
No, that's very helpful and very succinct. Obviously, we could go into great depth on that. Just a couple of quick follow-ups, and we're going to go to a break, and then we're going to come back with the good news. When you're looking at those parents, I assume it's a complete cross-section in terms of the overlay of where their kids are in school. Because when you think about typical problem or typical concerns about who your friends, your children's friends are, or the continuation of their faith as they get older, I mean, I would assume that if you were in a classical Christian school, obviously that's not the filter set, but you're running this across public, private, any setting, I guess. Do you know percentages of how those parents broke out in the study?
I do not. I don't have those percentages, but you're right in saying that there is this data is representative of all parents. So whatever types of distributions we know or feel to be true, right? Because we know that not many children are in Christian classical schools or even really private schools in the grand scheme of things. It's definitely a minority of students, right? We all know that. We can assume that this data is representative of those experiences in those various school settings.
Yeah. And it's certainly, it explains, again, the rise certainly since COVID and the overwhelming number of families that are coming to classical Christian schools saying, hey, we want to think about education differently because these pressures are very real. We're going to take a break, but I want to just kind of give a teaser too for the kind of part three when we come back. We talked in this segment about the high level of emotion that our students today, our children today, are kind of sorting through, as well as sort of this desire for authenticity. And I think we're going to get really practical. So as a parent, as educators, what does it look like to actually create environments where on the one hand, we don't fall in the ditch of kind of coddling too much emotional? Because I think that's sort of the victim mentality that gets wrapped up in emotionalism. And I think part of us wants to say, well, get up and dust yourself off and get on with it and quit complaining so much. On the other hand, we are emotional beings. So where those balances are, same thing with where we want to be authorities as parents, as educators, but we don't want to be authoritarian and then lose authenticity. So those are constant balancing acts. So we'll come back to that in part three. But why don't we take a quick break, Savannah? We'll come back and there is some great good news that we want to share with everybody. We'll be right back here on Basecamp Live.
Do you wonder if the traditional system of higher education is the best way to keep your student on the path to flourishing? Are you tired of having to choose between a solid Christian education and practical, marketable skills? We've got good news. You don't have to settle, and your student doesn't have to make the choice between a solid Christian education and skills development. At Excel College, we've combined a world-class classical Christian education with an apprenticeship model that allows students to gain hands-on experience in the field of their choice while providing them with the context to grow intellectually, spiritually, practically, professionally, and missionally, all the while graduating debt-free. At Excel College, students learn how to build a life, not just make a living. Want to find out more? Sign up for a virtual presentation on our website at www.theexcelcollege.com/visit.
At DBU, we believe the future is in God's hands. And our mission is to prepare students to be a light in a dark world. Through a vibrant community of faith, students are encouraged to discover their calling and make it a reality. They are challenged to integrate their faith in all of their studies and throughout their daily lives. They are shaped to become Christ-centered servant leaders whose heart is to transform the world, all for the glory of God. Are you ready for your future? Then let's go.
Well, Savannah, welcome back. We are excited to hear some good news. Those are heavy topics we just covered in the first part, and exciting to know that it sounds like just recently, maybe even just within the last couple of months, Barna came out with basically a study of the spiritual growth and interest and vitality that's actually out there post-pandemic. Talk a little bit about what you found.
So this is a lot of fun for me as a researcher. We've decided that in 2023, we at Barna are going to devote significant energy to what we're calling our Spiritually Open Initiative, because we have been seeing teasers in the data over the last 2 or 3 years of this increasing hunger for spirituality. I mean, we're even seeing, I think it's about 40% of Americans, right? About 4 in 10 are saying, I am more open to spiritual things today than I even was before the COVID-19 pandemic. So something shifted, right? And maybe it had to do with the isolation that we were all experiencing. Maybe it had to do, I think, frankly, because a lot of us came face to face with death, right? I mean, there was a lot going on spiritually over the last 3 years. And it caused people, even people that have no faith, that self-identify as atheist, agnostic, or none, it caused them to begin to ask questions that maybe they'd never asked before, especially younger adults, right? So that's why we're launching the Spiritually Open Initiative this year. And we're beginning to release articles regarding what we found. So I'm going to share just a little bit of data with us today. Firstly, I would like to make the case that there is spiritual openness, right? It's like, if you don't trust me, here's some data for you. So we asked all adults, but that included non-Christians and then people of no faith, right? Or people who say they have no faith. Do you think there is a spiritual or supernatural dimension to the world? And of course, the vast majority of Christians say yes, right? Like, yeah. But if we just pull out people of no faith, so those are people who self-identify as atheists, agnostics, or nones, 33% say that they're certain that a spiritual or supernatural dimension exists in the world. And then 28% say that they think it exists, but they're not certain. If you add those numbers together, that's half. So these are people that say that they have no religious faith, but they are pretty darn sure that there is a spiritual or supernatural dimension in the world. Furthermore, we're seeing a lot of people, even those people of no faith, right, say that they want to grow spiritually. So of course, we see that, again, the vast majority of Christians say, yes, I'd like to grow spiritually. I agree with that statement. But even among non-Christians and atheists, agnostics, and nones, half say, yeah, I want to grow spiritually. So there, I think that's what I mean when I say spiritual openness or spiritual hunger. Those of no faith, we ask them to self-identify, we ask them to describe their spirituality. How would they describe it? What words would they use? And the top word was open, right? So there's this openness that is really quite unique.
It's fascinating to think in terms of, again, thinking back to some of my own sociological studies and how generation to generation, you know, what is the rebellion of one generation becomes what's intriguing to the next. So, you know, you think back a decade ago, there was just a I think a currency, if you will, or an awareness among everyone in the culture about Jesus and church, and people had opinions, and, you know, televangelists were like that. Everybody kind of knew that. And I was thinking, I had a conversation a couple of weeks ago with a mom who was with her middle school daughter at a park recently. And the daughter was talking to, had befriended some other girls, and they were all sitting around the picnic table. And the mom just somehow got into a spiritual conversation. And to the shock of the mom, the two other girls who were not from church going homes had basically no knowledge of who Jesus was, other than he was a curse word. And there's this church thing, but there's no collective negative image of anything. And it's just this void that we've hit right now. So all of a sudden, the new rebellion, potentially to use that language, is I'm a spiritual person. I'm going to go pursue this guy named Jesus. So it just seems like the pendulum is truly swung the other way. Is that a fair statement?
Very, very well said. We have an amazing opportunity, but we also have to make sure that we do not follow the same developmental trajectory as a society that Europe followed, right? And we know that in Europe, when a generation like Gen Z came along, you know, maybe two or three or four generations past in Europe, the church did not capitalize on that opportunity of that blank slate generation in the best way possible. And then religion was lost, right? Two generations later for the masses in Europe. So I think a real question for us is, okay, we want to take advantage of this blank slate generation. We want to learn from European nations, and we want to make sure that we don't replicate that same mistake. We want to take advantage and be evangelists, actively be evangelists.
Well, that I love that term, blank slate generation. That's, again, it's there to be developed, and, you know, shame on us if we don't do something with that. What do you, any insights then, knowing most of those who are listening are in believing homes, and again, sometimes familiarity breeds complacency, and we just sort of assume because we're on autopilot, everything is fine and the same. Given the constant swirl around us, are there things that we ought to be thinking about as believing families or believing school leaders when it comes to making sure that we don't leave the slate blank, but we continue to winsomely engage in areas of faith? What might that look like differently given this moment?
A great question. I think something so practical for us as parents and as families is simply this: how many non-believers are in your circles? Like, actually, we find in our research that 1 in 4 Christian adults openly admit that they don't know how to relate to people that are different than them, whether that be faith background or generation. And in our study, Reviving Evangelism, we saw that many Christians are bubble wrapping themselves into Christian circles because it's comfortable, right? But our children, they are living in a generation where, like you said, those friends on the playground, right? They're going to bump into people that believe different things than them. Even if you try to bubble wrap your children into Christian circles, I'm sorry, but you're probably not going to be successful in doing so. That's just the moment in time that we're in the United States. So are we modeling for our children what it looks like to have healthy relationship with people who are different than us? And are we okay and comfortable with the idea that our children may be in relationship with non-Christians? Have we prepared them for those relationships? I think even those of us who have children in Christian schools, my husband is an educator in a Christian school. Even in those sorts of scenarios do not bubble wrap children in the way that they did 15, 20 years ago, right? So we just have to be okay with the idea that non-Christians are going to be in our circles. Yeah.
And then I would think not only full non-Christians, but to your point about this rise in spiritual openness, spiritual openness means it's very open. So it's not just Christian spirituality. It's anything spirituality. And you certainly see that in mainstream media these days. I mean, every elf and goblin and warlock or whoever else. I mean, there's just this fascination with the occult and with, you know, the dark side of spirituality, as well as just sort of hyper individualistic spirituality. How to, again, it seems, is that a true statement? Again, it's spiritual openness in the broadest of sense. So there's a dark and challenge to it getting too wide as much as it's a good thing as far as having open conversations.
Yeah, that's certainly true. We see in our data that openness to religion is not, hey, I want to learn about Jesus Christ, right? It's I'm open to exploring things that are going to help me live a more fulfilled life, right? That's really it. What is going to benefit me and help me? And I don't know if Davies, you recently saw Joshua Bassett, who's a Disney Channel actor. He recently converted to Christianity, and there's a little clip of his conversion testimony online. And essentially, the reason why he is now following Jesus, and he's a teenager, the reason why he's following Jesus now is because Jesus offered him a peace that he could not find anywhere else. As he was exploring spirituality, he did not find peace anywhere. He only found peace in the presence of Jesus Christ. And so, really for us, I think the takeaway from that testimony for us and for me personally is, wow, his relationship with Jesus and what Christianity offered him was helping him live a more fulfilled life, life to the full. So when we're talking about exploration, when we're talking about spiritual openness, yes, they're going to look far and wide, but the beautiful reality that we carry is that if we believe the Bible to be true, and I hope all of those listening today, we do believe that what the Bible says is true, then they will only find the answers that they're looking for.
Yeah. Well, it feels like the 1960s all over again. Lots of folks going to India to sit at the feet of the gurus and try to find the meaning of life, only to discover an emptiness in the Hinduism, and wandering to places like Labrie Fellowship and other things that back in the 60s where it was honest answers to honest questions. And we do have a faith that can be defended intellectually, but it can also answer the deepest hungers and needs, as you're describing, with this, you know, with so many that take Jesus to the test and find him to be exactly who he says he is, which is encouraging. So do you see, and you know, I'm thinking about the obviously big headline in the last few weeks, that Asbury revivals that's going on. I mean, it seems like that would correlate to what you're seeing. I mean, here's this sort of Kairos moment where there's this generational hunger met at this exact point. Certainly the Holy Spirit has something to do with these things, but how do you correlate what you're seeing there with the statistics you're discovering?
Yeah. Within the last year or two, we have found in the research that the next generation desperately wants to know that Christianity is not only true, but that it is good. And that Jesus Christ not only saves you from your sins, but that he offers hope to people, that he is loving, that he is wise, that he is friendly, the humanity of Jesus, right? And we want to know that he is not just near, and that he, you know, all the spiritual stuff, right? He saves you for your sin, from your sins. He gets you into heaven, but that he being in relationship with Jesus is beneficial to us in the here and now. And if you watch on YouTube or anything, the testimonials that are coming out of the Asbury revival, if you listen at all to the next generation talking about what's going on at these revivals and things, think about it through that lens of, okay, are they talking about how the truth of Jesus or the goodness of Jesus? And it's interesting how the majority of the time, at least in our experience at Barna's, we've been sort of tracking along with these revivals, is they're talking about the goodness of Jesus. So very practically, we never want to not speak truth or teach truth. That's not what I'm saying at all. Please don't mishear me. But are we also showing this next generation that is very spiritually open that Jesus is good and that Christianity is good, and being committed to a local church or reading your Bible is good? It's not only to fill yourself with truth, but also to experience and understand.
That's an excellent point, and it's a good lead in here into, we'll take a break and come back in part three, because I want to get into just more of that. Okay, what do we do with this if I'm a parent or I'm an educator living out growing up the next generation in light of these issues? Because again, I think especially speaking to the classical Christian world, and especially those of us, I'm a Gen Xer. So I grew up in the days where you did argue propositional truth. And if you could convince somebody of their sin and convince them of heaven, then that was the primary. And those are still obviously as critical as they've ever been ultimately. But to your point, the currency that's being traded right now is this sense of we need to connect to Jesus emotionally, relationally. There needs to be something about that walk that impacts every moment of every day. And I know I think in your research here on the open, some of the results of this survey, 76% say Jesus speaks to me in a way that is relevant to my life. So obviously, again, relevance is a word perhaps that is scary to us because we think of it as meaning kind of acquiescing to the culture, but it's really just, it makes sure Jesus has something to do with my daily life is a, I think, a noble and reasonable hope and aspiration.
Amen. That'll preach, Davies. That's really good.
I'll pass the offering out next. Well, actually, why don't we take a break and we'll come back and get in, speaking of practical, get into some just some great suggestions and encouragement to us as we try to sort through how to live out in this crazy world. But so grateful for your research and statistics and information, Savannah. We'll be right back.
Our promising young people need a new kind of college that cuts through the failings of the mainstream university and challenges them to turn their conviction into action. Introducing Hildegard College, a new classical Christian college that reclaims the fearless pursuit of the good and the true for the leadership and virtue we need from the next generation. Hildegard uniquely combines a classical liberal arts curriculum with an education in entrepreneurship. Our program is focused and affordable, created for young scholars who seek the rigor of classical education and also the practical knowledge they need to put their passion into practice. Hildegard is located in the cultural hub of Costa Mesa, California, and is currently accepting applications for its inaugural freshman class. Learn more at hildegard.college.
He's worked with families for more than 30 years as a licensed professional counselor and marriage family therapist. It's time for a quick encouragement on the best practices of raising the next generation. We call it a McCurdy moment.
Keith, you know, one of the most basic struggles of being a parent and co-parenting with your spouse is how to be on the same page. I mean, it's really easy when Johnny says, hey, can I have some ice cream? And you say yes, and or you say no, and they go in the other room and ask mom, and they get a yes. And then the kids learn pretty quickly how to kind of, become politicians, which is not what we're trying to raise. We're trying to raise, so what do we do? How do we stay on the same page as we parent?
I tell you what, this is one of the core parts of parenting is staying unified. And there is a lot that goes into that. But let me give you one. Let me give you one that a lot of people struggle with. And I call it no freelancing. You're not allowed to freelance in the parenting role. And freelancing really is two things. Once you've agreed on something, you know, when you've agreed, here are the responsibilities, here are the privileges, here are the guidelines at home, never go off script when the other parent isn't there. You know, to your example, I love hearing, you know, it's always dads. Dads that come in and say, well, yeah, let them have ice cream before dinner. And, you know, mom was gone. And the problem is when you freelance in that way, you actually undermine your wife's authority and ultimately undermine parental authority. So the first part of no freelancing is once you've reached decisions, don't go off script. The second is, and this is a freelancing that happens a lot, when something new comes up, don't make a decision in the moment unless it's an emergency. And I got to tell you, 99.9% of things that happen with children are not emergencies. And now they think they're emergencies and we act like they're emergencies, but they're not. As my grandma would say, their head's not on fire and they're not bleeding out of their eyeball. It's not an emergency. When something new comes up, you put them on pause and you don't say, I'm going to go talk to your dad about that, because then if you come back and the answer's bad, dad gets blamed. You just say, you know what? I'm going to get back to you on that. I need to think about that for a little bit. But then the parents get together, reach a decision on how they're going to handle it. And then that parent goes back and says, you know what? Here's what we're doing. That way you maintain, you preserve, you maintain, you build unity by not freelancing.
That's a great advice. Really well done. And you're right. It's so easy to do in the heat of the moment. You're just trying to look for an easy out and you have to pause and come back to it again. Like you've always said, it's difficult to be a parent. It's a lot easier just to do what's easy for us individually and to miss out on that opportunity. So great advice. Thanks so much, Keith.
Got a question for Keith to answer on a future McCurdy moment? Well, send it to us at info@basecamplive.com and learn more about Keith McCurdy on the speaking page on the Basecamp Live website. All right, Savannah, well, we could talk for hours. This topic is absolutely fascinating. There's so many dimensions to it, but in the spirit of kind of being practical and what do we process as parents through all of this information, we've touched on a number of major topics, what's not going well, what is going well. But just if you had a few minutes, kind of be it parent to parent here for a moment, what advice, encouragement, would you give to a parent about how to maximize the time you have with your children in light of this cultural moment?
It is a scary cultural moment for parents, isn't it? I think any parent listening today who feels overwhelmed or under-resourced or underprepared to parent in a Christian household, I think you are not alone. Firstly, let me just say that. I think even going back to that first segment we did, we shared that there's a lot of heavy concern that parents are carrying for the spiritual future of their children, for their relationships, for their interactions with and relationships with technology. There's so much concern. So you're not alone if you feel overwhelmed. Let me just start there. And I hope these next bits and nuggets of, I guess, wisdom, I can call it that, will help you. So we know that there's great distrust in institutions, right? We already talked about that when it comes to young people. They don't know who to trust. They don't know where to turn. And I want to return back to this idea that honesty and authenticity is really important. I think very practically, tip number one, don't be afraid to be a human with your children. Don't be afraid to talk to your children about where you have doubts spiritually, the things that you are personally working through. If you have a friend who has cancer and you are struggling to process what that means spiritually, don't just process that with your spouse behind closed doors. Let your children see that you are having a healthy wrestle with that friend's reality, right? That you're having a healthy wrestle as a believer with understanding the place that sickness or cancer has in this world. Show them that. Be honest with your children about what Christianity means to you. And it doesn't mean you have to air out all your dirty laundry with your kids, but they actually, they're exposed to more than you probably even realize when it comes to the hard stuff that people are walking through because of social media and technology. Even if your children directly are not on social media, they have friends that are on social media and they're having conversations with those friends, right? So be a real human with your children so that you, as an authority role in their life, they already can trust you because they see your humanity and they see the honesty that you are approaching life with.
That's great advice. And it's freeing and freeing because we are human, and to not be able to admit even to, certainly to our grown or older children. I mean, again, you got to be wise about how much you're revealing. You don't want to create a moment of stress for a grammar schooler in a way that's not helpful or necessary. And again, I think all of this feels like the term kind of walking the razor's edge, because where's that line that I think parents really have to think about between being too vulnerable and becoming the friend of their child versus staying in that role of parent and authority and having some amount of, more, I guess, cautious boundaries that you're putting on your comments. You have to figure that out. But I think you're right on. Parents that are too, have it all, presumably all put together, are really not presenting an impression of life and faith that it's realistic. So that's really good advice.
Yeah, like even when I was raised, because I was raised in a different moment in time, right? I'm a millennial. So even my parents would only have serious conversations with each other behind closed doors. Now, fighting is one thing or having arguments is one thing, but serious conversations, they just didn't want to expose us to that. They were like, no, your children, stay in your naivety. But that's just not an option, right? To just keep children in naivety anymore. In the sense of, we're real people that are thinking through things deeply, and we're processing things as Christians deeply. So yeah, it's a different era for parents, and I hope that is freeing. But also, yes, you got to walk with such discernment, and yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing too, along those same lines though, of walking with discernment, what's the other thing we need to walk with? And that's patience. We need to give our children permission to explore. We have to, spiritually. And that does not mean that we don't teach truth at all. That is not what that means. But we have to give our children space to explore. I think the best maybe example of this is just very practically what I know this has looked like in a school example. in a Christian school. So there was a Bible teacher. There's a Bible teacher that I know who he was teaching about the life of Christ was the course that he was teaching, but his students kept having so many questions for him, high school students, so many questions about LGBTQ. And he was like, that's not what this curriculum is about, you know, but they just wanted to talk about it and talk about it. And they kept asking him questions and asking if they could talk about it in Bible class. And so he got permission from the administrators at his school to address it. And he, you know, was very respectful and honoring of the institution that he was leading within in order to address the topic. But how he went about it is he devoted three full classes to exploration. And he allowed the students to ask questions, to talk to each other, to have dialogue about what they thought or what they heard this influencer say. And he just facilitated. But then on day four, he said, I am a Christian and I believe the Bible. And so then he taught his, you know, his worldview when it came to the issue. But he allowed 3 days for exploration and then 1 day of teaching, right? So I think very practically as parents, how can we adopt maybe that same mentality of we do not neglect declaration in our homes or teaching in our homes, but we allow space for exploration.
So, and I think that's a fantastic model to think about kind of, again, the two words declaration and exploration in the home. And again, in light of the other audience that we have, teachers and educators, I certainly think it's the exact same model. It makes a ton of sense. And I think honestly, as a classical Christian educator for 20 years now, I think we have, by our natural predisposition, we're too declarative, if that's the word, or we tend to declare things too much because we have a lot to say that's timeless and of great substance and depth. So we feel like we need to just sort of present that maybe in a one-sided type of way. And I've said often on the podcast, it'd be interesting if we were to go start a school from scratch in light of this cultural moment. Might there be an interest, or would it be interesting? It would be interesting, I think, to maybe effectively stop at your 11th grade year as far as one more reading of another round of great books and great ideas. You've already done this, let's say, for 11 years. So maybe spend the 12th year delving into the top, whatever number, 10, 20 issues of the cultures you just described, and then go back and dig into the great ideas and from the literature and the readings, but also couple it with what's really being said. You mentioned influencers out there. I mean, we've got to sort of get ready to deploy into a real world situation and to be able to bring in the best of our thinking and our Socratic discussion, but do so in light of issues that are relevant and real and that translate between the great ideas that we've studied. So maybe bridging that is probably more relevant now than it's ever been and more urgently needed. What are your thoughts there to our educators?
Yes, the Socratic method is the way of the future. I think if I may be so bold as to say it, that's what this next generation demands. I think I even when I was in college and undergrad, I went through a program where we read the great books, many, many of them, and followed a Socratic learning style. That was my first real exposure to a Socratic learning style classroom, right? And I am seeing that learning style resonates the most with the next generation because it facilitates exploration in a very healthy way. So for the educators in the room, make sure that you are familiar with that learning style. I know many of you in classical Christian schools, that is what you do, right? So devote yourself to that and then think about how you need to nuance your approach specifically with the needs of the next generation in mind.
That's so well said. Well, a lot more we could talk about. Savannah, thank you for your time today. I know there are many people that want to dig in deeper and read more. So direct folks to Barna and the resources that you have, and in particular, this article we've been talking around, The Rise of Spiritual Openness.
Yeah. So Barna.com is our website, our website, barna.com. And if you really want to be a data-informed leader, I would highly encourage you to look into our product, Barna Access Plus. It is our subscription service. It's like our Netflix, right? Of all of our research and the interviews we've conducted, and so much stuff is in there. It's a library of resources to help you grow more confident in your leadership and really understand the times so you can know what to do in response. So check that out. You can find links to it through our website, Barna Access Plus.
Fantastic. And so, you know, we're looking forward to you joining us this summer at the SCL conference in June in Dallas. You'll be on the main stage giving us more updates and fascinating research that you're doing. So we look forward to having you there with us.
Yes, very excited. See you soon.
Thanks so much, Vanna.
Hey there, Basecamp Live listeners. This is Davey's daughter, Hannah, here. And I want to congratulate this amazing podcast on almost 5 years of incredible content, enriching interviews, and over 200 episodes. So that has brought so much encouragement to people. And thank you for being a part of that. Thank you for supporting this message, this mission. And there are a couple ways that you can help in sharing that message. First of all, please leave a 5-star review on whatever app you are using to listen to this podcast. You can also share it with a friend. That's a great way to get the message out about Basecamp Live. And of course, share your story with us at info@basecamplive.com. There we'll also answer all your questions and more. And any topics that you'd like to hear too, please send them there to info@basecamplive.com. We'll see you next week, everybody. Thanks.